My old man told me when I was younger, like right when I first turned pro, he's like, you got one shot at this.
Yeah.
He's like, you're going to snap your fingers and you're going to be old, beat up,
fucking
and
up.
Your time's going to be over.
Yep.
So he's like, don't live with any regret and give it 100% at all yep. times. And that was 100% on the dirt bike. That was 100% in partying and enjoying myself. There's nothing worse in life than living with regret.
You're going to find out like very soon, you know, there's a reason why I'm paid to fucking say written lines, you know, making up my own is like not my strong suit.
It's all right. I'm a stupid dirt bike rider. So
yeah, dude, it's great.
I do my best work with the helmet on.
Oh my God. Coming out to your place and meeting you and sort of not just seeing your setup, but just the feeling there and meeting Big and you know, man, I just immediately connected to you and like just had like respect, you know, we just immediately just started talking
totally.
About kids and family. So
yeah,
that's kind of the idea. So
it's cool in this day and age to align with people because it gets a little trickier.
I know, man.
You know,
I know. Would you say you've endured more injuries than any elite professional athlete in the world?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there's like nothing like it, right?
Dude,
like,
I was just at the doctor yesterday. I thought I blew my knee out last week.
How the fuck
but
did
I got
you do
a
that,
tor- I tore my meniscus and sprained my MCL. Just exiting a turn, caught my toe, happened that fast, spun my foot backwards.
So you're on a fucking motorcycle. You're taking, and what, this is
are
like,
we started yet?
Huh? It doesn't matter. Okay. Yeah. But like, you're just riding for pleasure?
Well, so I think, as I told you, I had a disc replacement in my neck and my back in the fall. And I've been back on my bike 2 weeks. And honestly, it's just a bad day at the office. That's the shit that happens. I was turning laps. I was exiting a turn. I put my foot back on the peg to charge down the straightaway. And a little clump caught my toe and spun my foot backwards. And luckily it didn't pop, but I saw that white flash, which I'm sure you've seen before through boxing, and rode around for another half lap. I'm like, oh man, this is not good.
Yeah.
And anyways, hobbled around for a week. I finally got a hold of my knee specialist and went down yesterday and small meniscus tear and a MCL sprain, but no surgery, and I'll be back on my bike in 2 weeks. Come hell or high water. But to answer your question, you know, not to take anything away from any other sport. Mm-hmm. I mean, being the top of the totem pole in any professional sport is a huge accomplishment. But unfortunately, motocrossers, we just take a beating. I mean, I'm in the high 80s now for mm-hmm. broken bones. I've had 19 surgeries. I can't tell you how many injections and experimental medications I've had shot into my body to try to, you know, patch me up and get me back on my bike.
Yeah.
So it's the black eye of the sport, you know, and now we're starting to learn a lot about athletes having concussion syndrome. I mean, I know I definitely have elements of it.
Yep.
I think that's what kind of leads to.
What are you seeing? Like, what are you feeling?
You know, as I get older, I don't know if it's due to like, you know, responsibility of children, age, you know, compounded with concussions over the years, but you know, I get a little stressed, a little easier, a little more anxious.
Homie. Okay.
And you know, I know that it's there. I mean, I've had some pretty serious bell ringers.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I've had friends that have, you know, committed suicide due to it.
Yep.
And so I'm just trying to kind of keep my marbles together and know that that is a piece of it and deal with it and move forward positively as opposed to getting immersed by it.
So your big injury that happened, I mean, you've had lots of big fucking injuries, I know, but like that, what, you were 16 years old and it was before you turned pro.
Yeah, so what you're talking about was it happened when I was 15 years old. I was going into my last amateur national race, about to turn pro, and I was out at the actual racetrack where they were having the last amateur national at. Just so happens my old man and his company were building the track, and they called me out to do some lap times. It was a brand new track, and so I came out, I geared up. My old man told all of his guys to take lunch. Me and another guy were going to go out and do a few laps so they could get kind of lap times to figure out how long to run the motos. I geared up, jumped on my bike, took off down the start straightaway. It was me and a buddy of mine, Richard. We were kind of side by side, and there's a section of the track where it was a big sweeping right-hander. And on the inside of the turn, they were kind of dropping big piles of topsoil. So my buddy Rich kind of rolled over the inside and I railed the outside, and there was a big, probably like 3-story tall, big tabletop jump. And I came around the outside and hit that takeoff. And literally as I came off, I saw a scraper backing up the backside of the hill.
Fucking like fucking like big fucking
massive
coming at you.
Coming at me. It was on the center of the track. My first reaction in the air is I threw the bike sideways. I literally landed in between the back tires, and the scraper is the one that has that big belt in the middle with that. It's called a stinger on the back. I hit right at the stinger, flipped me over the handlebars. I landed in front of the tire. I looked down. Both my legs were broken. They were folded mid thigh. My feet, my kneecaps were under my butt. My feet were behind me. And, I'm sitting on the ground and I looked up and the wheel is right. I'm sitting right in front of the wheel. The operator panics and jumps out because he felt me hit the tractor. He didn't set the emergency brake. The tractor starts skidding down the hill. I put my hands up to block my face. God, my dad just barely swooped me out, got me out of the way, but I compounded my femur. I was bleeding out. Tourniquet on my leg, rushed me to the hospital. And yeah, I ended up breaking both femurs, one in five places, one in six, compounded one of them. Broke my tib fib on my right leg, folded that in half, and then both my arms.
And like your dad was there. He built that for you, right? Like, I mean, I really want to like just talk about your dad, but like, and your dad, I mean, he saved your life. He pulled you out of that situation. Like, what the fuck was that like for him? I mean, have you guys talked about that?
That's actually a bigger conversation we can get into. But yeah, you know, it was just treacherous for him. You know, like not only having that happen, I almost bled out on the way to the hospital. I almost didn't make it to the hospital because I was just bleeding out so bad. You know, going through the surgery process, the doctor wanted to take my leg off immediately. He begged the doctor to at least stitch it back together and see if my leg will hold because they thought my leg had died. And, you know, through that process, you know, it was extremely traumatic. But, you know, to kind of circle it back around, you know, that's what I did. Like, I was on the trajectory at 15 years old. I've been riding since I was 4 years old, racing since I was five, racing at a very serious level since I was 12, and looking to go pro and do this for a living.
Right.
So that mental capacity at 15 years old, that this is my career trajectory, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, like, you got to take the good with the bad. You know, you got to take your licks and keep moving forward. And to me at 15, that was just another lick.
Is there any second where you're like, dude, fuck this, man. This is insane.
You know what I tell people is, you know, it's a little different with youth. You know, you bounce, you get back, you heal quicker. But, you know, when you're laying in the dirt in any major injury like that, you're like, oh my God, why the fuck do I do this? You know, this isn't worth it. And you go through this process, right? And you're in surgery and then you're in recovery and then you're home on the couch. But much as your body heals, those memories kind of fade out. And so much about motocross, I would say any action sports. And again, I'm never taking anything away from traditional ball sports, but you know, I will ride a dirt bike until I can no longer breathe or walk. Tony Hawk will skateboard, whether he's getting a paycheck or not. I don't know if Joe Montana plays two-hand touch on the weekend, but action sports people, it's not about money because going back to those days, none of us made money.
Right.
I mean, money only came into action sports in like early 2000s.
And you weren't a professional yet.
No, I wasn't a professional yet.
This was a plan. This was a drive. And where do you think that comes from?
I think it's just the competitive drive in motocross because I was, again, comparing apples to apples, you know, a traditional team sport. You know, you're kind of doing it for fun and it's probably not so much about the win when you're in T-ball or playing, you know, minor league baseball at 12, 13 years old. But, you know, racing motocross, it's competition at its best. I mean, you start by that gate drop and the first one across the finish line is the winner. So that kind of need for competition is ingraining you at such a young age while you're just doing it from a fun standpoint because, you know, just like anything, you're going to, you know, if you're playing baseball, some of the kids care about winning and some of them don't. And that's just kind of probably what separates the two. But for me as a motocross rider, starting to race at five, you know, getting a little bit better by 6, 7 years old, I wanted to win each weekend. I mean, yeah, I was out there with my friends. I was out there with my old man. But, you know, that need to win is ingrained into you at a very young age. So,
well, it was ingrained into you.
Into me, yes.
Into you. I mean, I guess that's my question. Is like, and again, like not really having like a real, like thorough understanding of the sport. Like, look, man, I can give you 100 examples of guys who are fucking beasts at baseball. Guys I know who could you go in a boxing gym, they can fight their asses off. But you get them into a fight and they get their ass beat one time and they're like, yo, I'm done with this forever.
Yeah.
Or you get hit by one pitch and it changes
and
the
game.
And
it scares you.
Is there any of that? Do you feel like that? Have you seen guys get shook?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot of people don't have, there is a mental switch you have to have. Like in what I do, and especially getting to that top tier, it's not if, it's when you crash. And it's not if, it's when you have a serious injury. And you have to have that mental switch. Mm-hmm. And if, at any given point you lose that switch, it's too dangerous to do and you can't do it anymore, or you can't do it at the level that you're doing it. And I've had to kind of really chase that switch a handful of times. I mean, we're talking about that one injury. Like, that was my first major injury, but I've broke both of my legs and both of my arms at the same time twice.
Multiple times, yeah.
You know, I shattered my heel and broke a femur on Tony Hawk's tour,
right?
Because I had to make a split decision as I'm going up a ramp and one of the skaters popped out on the deck in front of me. Okay, am I going to go into the crowd or am I just going to sacrifice myself and jump into the vert ramp? And I jumped into the vert ramp and destroyed me. And then that was the second time that I almost died from it. I mean, blood clots and, you know, pinched arteries and ICU for almost a month in a wheelchair for 4 months after that. You know, like, there's just a switch you have to have. And if you lose that switch, then it's time to do it for fun or move along. And I think that's kind of what separates, I guess, the people that stick with it and, you know, that can push through the injuries and the people that can't.
For you, what is the emotional kind of effect of when you literally like can't use your, when your body is like you can't use your body? Is that like, how would you describe that? Is that fear? Is it frustration? Is it everything? Like,
it's everything. It's absolutely torturous, you know, because I am a very physical person, you know, like, you know, when I'm laid up, I mean, that's why I'm so hard headed in my recovery. You know, like we've talked about a little bit, you know, I have a major surgery. Two more winters from now, and I've already had three the last three winters. And my mental focus is to get through it as fast as possible, go into it in the best shape as possible.
Is that where you were at 15? Did you have that attitude at 15? So you already had sort of a professional athlete's mentality at 15. And was it different at 15 than when you're already, you know, on Tony Hawk's? Like,
it was different mentally. At 15 because it's probably like you in your career. It's that carrot's dangled in front of you, right? And like, I want to get to that level. So I got to get through this injury as quickly as possible so I can get back on the amateur circuit, earn my points and get enough points to turn pro. And like, so I had that carrot dangled in front of me because I wanted to make that platform. And then once you get to that platform, you got to maintain it.
Fuck yeah.
And it does get a little trickier, you know, like now as a, you know, legitimate professional athlete with endorsements coming in, now it's like, okay, I got to get through this injury quickly because I have an injury clause in my contract. If I'm off my bike too long, I lose my contract.
Right.
And that's paying my mortgage and that's paying for my lifestyle.
And when you're 15, what's the first, I mean, like, what's the first thing? Like, fuck, I'm not, I mean, does that even enter in your brain? Like, I'm not going to attain my dream. Like, I'm on this track and I'm not going to get there.
Or absolutely.
Is it, like, it is. It is.
Oh, it's a huge fear because with motocross, we don't have off season.
Right.
You know, we race, you know, race, compete, whatever discipline you're doing. I mean, it's 52 weeks a year. And being sidelined for 6 months, the progression rate is so fast, especially as an amateur, you can miss your window. And technically, I kind of did miss my window. Like, looking back in the grand scheme of things, you know, I don't want to say I was a prodigy by any means, but I was a really good am. And I was set to turn pro my 16th birthday. And my natural trajectory is like, okay, hopefully I'll get onto a good team, a factory ride, and just go through the ranks. But that four month setback of not riding held me back as I am one more year. And I think everything happens for a reason. I mean, even getting into the Tony Hawk tour injury, but that trajectory slowed me down into the pro ranks. I was a completely average pro supercross racer at best, but that's also what made me pivot halfway through my motocross career from being a racer into focusing on freestyle motocross.
Right.
So everything does happen for a reason, but you're constantly in that mindset of, I got to get healthy because either the wagon's going to pass me, or I got to get healthy so I can keep my contract, or I got to get healthy for the next big contest.
But dude, I am fucking convinced that this is only with you, man. Cause like, your career is fucking unbelievable. And it's like this work ethic and this fucking drive. Where does your pops, what role does he play? Just talk a little bit about him and the way you grew up.
Well, that's what's pretty interesting, you know, about my upbringing. And, you know, look, I'm not going to say my life was hard, but, you know, my old man was 23 years old when I was born. My mom was out of the picture, and he was a just entry-level construction worker. He made 35 grand a year raising a newborn and a child on his own through my entire child period. And, you know, as motocross got serious for me, you know, he was always very adamant about, you know, school. He's like, I will support, I will leverage everything I have to support your motocross career. But if you don't have A's and B's, those motorcycles are parked. I don't care how good you are. I don't care what race is coming up. And that was how life was, you know? So through my whole school career, you know, it was A's and B's where the bikes were parked.
Right.
And in hindsight, it was the best thing he could have done for me. And there were two times where my bike was parked until the next report card, and that never happened again. But because of that work ethic, you know, you get back to work ethic. I had to have that work ethic in school. And the other, you know, the other contingency was, if you're not giving 100% on your motorcycle, I'm not going to waste my money. You know, he works way too hard. I mean, there was times where we wouldn't have power so that we had money for entry fees at my next motocross race, or we didn't have, you know, hot water and gas because I needed a new bike for the next race season.
You as a dad now, do you carry that same line?
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's like, if you're going to be doing something, you do it 100% or you're not doing it.
But yeah, I do, because, and I'm sure you can appreciate this. Mm-hmm. The tricky part is, you know, my kids aren't going to experience my upbringing, meaning, oh man, am I going to have hot water tonight for a shower? Or, oh shit, are the lights going to be on? Or, oh shit, is my old man going to come home from the bar tonight? Mm-hmm. You know, like, my kids aren't going to experience that. Mm-hmm. So I have to be hard on them in their work ethic and their follow through and committing to things, because I don't want my kids to be raised spoiled little brats, and my kids aren't going to suffer the way that I did.
That's right. You got to put adversity in their lives. I mean, it's like, that's part of the responsibility of being a dad. If it's
exactly.
So do you think that sort of mandate, if you're going to be out there, you're going 100% or you're not going to be out there. Do you think that that's to teach you a life lesson, or do you think that's to make you the best at what you can be in motocross? Do you think it's all of the above? Like, just tell me about, like, kind of him and his heart.
I think it was a life lesson, truthfully, because look, me and him both knew at a very young age, it's 1% that makes it to that top level. And of that 1%, there's probably 5% of that 1% that actually make enough money to live on. You know, again, this was a passion thing. But he wanted to instill that work respect into me, because, you know, he's always told me, he's like, you don't want to swing a shovel for a living. It's fucking miserable. And, you know, to this day, I will go rob banks before I shovel asphalt like my old man does.
Yeah.
And it was putting that work ethic in me that obviously helped me through my motocross career, but more importantly, through the rest of my life, whether that's the businesses that I started, whether that's the commitment to my kids and my wife, whether it's commitments to my friends, you know, like, you have to have that work ethic and that drive, especially nowadays. And that was the biggest gift and biggest life lesson I got through how hard he was on me through those years. And don't get me wrong. I mean, like, he would have no problem telling me if I had a shitty race, or if I was riding like a fucking asshole, or, you know, if my intensity wasn't there. But the lessons that I got from that, you know, just like anything, like, you can tell somebody, you know, the quickest way from A to B is this line, but sometimes they got to learn it for themselves. And that was my learning lessons.
You primarily grew up in Vegas, right?
Yep.
I mean, can you just kind of, like, describe, like, Vegas, what that was like? What, cause I think people have an idea of Vegas and I don't know, people I know who actually, like, grew up there. Can you just talk about sort of, like, your Vegas and the Vegas you came up in?
It was great. You know, I was there from 79 until, I guess, 05-ish. And it was great. I mean, that town at that time, it was less than 100,000 people.
Yeah.
And for what I did and my passions were, it was great. You know, it was great for my old man, for the construction business. And I had nothing but desert to ride in. And, you know, the tricky thing about Vegas is you kind of go down two paths. You know, you either, you're productive and you take something away positive from living in that town, or, as you can imagine, you go the wrong path and you get, you know, locked up on the strip and drugs, booze, anything in between.
Yeah.
And for me, it was a really positive environment because I had this athlete mentality at a very young age. You know, I didn't drink in high school.
Yep.
I didn't party. I didn't have the opportunity to do all those things. So for me, it was really positive.
And so when your dad sees sort of the environment you're growing up in, do you think that that was a big part of his reason of sort of putting the push that he put on? I mean, was that also it?
Yeah, I do think so, because, you know, my family tree, from my grandfather to my dad, my uncles, and myself, you know,
there's a lot of the other path.
There was a total ability to choose the other path.
Fucking it.
You know, and
I know that well.
My grandpa was a scrapper and a rough guy, and my old man was the same way. And I have those tendencies as well.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and I think it was probably very beneficial for my old man to have this tool, this little carrot to take it away.
Yep.
It's like, dude, you step out of line, it's gone.
Yep.
And, you know, I hope I can have that carrot for my kids one day, so my kids aren't telling me to fuck off, you know, because it's pretty easy to do.
Yeah.
But it was definitely helpful.
And how good of a rider, like, how good is he?
So I was the only, it's funny, like, my grandfather used to ride dirt bikes, my dad rode, my uncles rode, none of them for, you know, serious, just for fun. You know, they all grew up in Southern California, and that was the thing to do back in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, we didn't go to baseball games. We went to, you know, the Rose Bowl Supercross. Like, you know, our, we were a very motorcycle interested family. So that's why, if, you know, for my fourth Christmas under the tree was a dirt bike. And that was just our angle. Like, and then my grandfather used to come to every race with us on the weekend, you know, like that was our weekend. Me and my old man would leave my house and stop by and pick up my grandpa. He'd be out there with his ice chest and already a six pack deep at 7 o'clock in the morning. And we'd go out to the motocross track all weekend.
So like you loving it early. And I imagine like being good at it. I mean, how, like, that must have been just great for him. I mean, that must have been, I mean, was that part of it too? Just like seeing how proud it made him and how happy it made him?
Definitely, you know, because that was our bonding time, because my old man, he worked 60 hours a week.
Right.
You know, like I would have to wake myself up in the morning, you know, he would call me and at 7 o'clock when Scooby-Doo's on and I had to get myself out the door to school and back home and cook myself dinner a lot of the times. Yep. So the weekends were ours to go racing and that's where we spent our quality time.
Yeah.
And we got to experience this together, you know, like what little he knew about motocross, you know, he tried to pass on to me and a lot of it was trial and error, but that was our bonding experience. And I would race 40, 45 weekends a year. So that was our routine. And we got to have that quality time.
Yeah.
He knew how close I was to death. I could only imagine what it was like for him to go through. I mean, I was in the hospital for like 10 days, you know, in traction and with two broken femurs and all this crazy shit. And I couldn't imagine what he went through. Honestly, it had to have been absolutely gut-wrenching, and it would have been really easy for him to slam the gavel and be like, okay, we're done with this. I'm personally never going to go through that again.
Yeah.
But he was extremely, you know, I got out of the hospital and after.
You think he felt that at all though?
Like, sure. I'm,
I mean, how could he not?
Yeah, how could you not? Right. Exactly. You know, and, to go through that and then to still have the support for me, you know, cause we let a couple of weeks go by and that big race I was getting ready to do, I was out there in my wheelchair with my broken legs and watching the class, you know, I was supposed to be racing in. And a couple of weeks later we talked about it. He's like, so, you know, what do you want to do from here? And I'm like, I'm going to get as healthy as fast as possible. And I think I can get back and do the winter series. Fuck, and he's just like, all right, well, put in the work and put in the work. And I was back on my bike for the winter series. But, you know, but then fast forward, my old man had to watch my brother die from a motocross accident. Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's just absolutely gut-wrenching. It's hard. And, I couldn't imagine it.
When your brother passed, was that before or after the Tony Hawk crash?
My brother passed, God, I guess it's been about 11 years now. So it was after that. Me and my brother were 12 years apart.
Right.
So I wasn't in the house too much with my brother. I was basically out of the house at about 16. Mm-hmm. But I had to watch my dad go through it all over again with my brother, which eventually, I think my dad went through such a major break with it. Like, we don't talk anymore because it was just such a, you know, it's, you know, no one's supposed to bury their kid.
Right.
And he had to go through that. And it was just gut wrenching for him. And he had to live that all over again.
And I mean, if you don't mind me asking, like, where do you think that that comes from? Like you guys not being able to.
You know, I think it comes from, you know, me and my dad were so close and it was always just me and him. And then, you know, he remarried, you know, him and his wife had my brother and it was just a different dynamic. And I think my dad and my brother weren't as close as me and him were. They had a lot of kind of personal issues. Like, my brother didn't have the drive that I had. And it was probably very frustrating for him. And I think with my brother passing, all that guilt, all that emotion just flipped the switch. And it became this very uncomfortable dynamic where, you know, like, you know, Anthony's living in my shadow and we weren't there from him. And it's like, no, that's actually not the case. And it just kind of snowballed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, at the end of the day, even though we don't talk, I have all the compassion in the world for what he's gone through. Yeah. And, you know, that little bit of, you know, resentment, I hold back because it's like, dude, no one's supposed to go through that.
Totally. It's like the one thing that we know, I think.
Yeah.
For sure. It's like, if you have a kid, doesn't matter whether you're near, far, you know, talking, not talking, that love is like unbreakable. And it's so like unbelievably profound and undeniable.
The lessons that he instilled in me until, you know, the day that I became a man and was out the door and living my life on my own. I mean, that's what made me.
You know, similarly, I think just like with my old man, I mean, there's just like, and it's a generational thing. It's a hardness. And I'm like, those things that were like, fuck, man, you know, that's pretty rough, dude. It's like, now I'm enormously grateful for them.
Yeah.
And there's no way I could be doing what I do without that. What kind of dad are you?
Well, truthfully, with my daughter, I'm a pushover.
Me too,
because it's it's the only girl. You know.
Yeah.
But we have a very personality-wise, we're very, very similar. So we
How
have
so?
A good. She's much like me, introvert. You know, not too extroverted. Very intense. Very competitive. Mm-hmm. Very physical. Very driven.
Like, give me an example of her competitiveness.
When she was younger, it was like teaching her how to ride a bicycle, right? Sounds pretty pretty simple. I would kind of teach her things, and she would just be like, no, I got this, I got this. And then she would go off and hide somewhere and practice and figure it out, and then come show me. Look what I did.
Like,
in that competitive streak in her. And now it's like, whether it's skiing or wake surfing or any sport that she does, I mean, if she's not, like, she races BMX, and if she's not, you know, if she's not podium top three going home with a trophy, she is so hard on herself. And it's just that, and it's like I said, I can't explain why I had it at such a young age, why I can't explain that she does, because I don't push for competitiveness or doing sports. Like, I want to introduce them to everything, but she just has that ingrained in her.
And and that's it, man. It's like, you either have that or you don't, but it's that sort of like desire and like that sort of innate kind of like natural instinct to go get in the fucking lab and like, okay, that's not working, so I'm going to go like privately, and whatever that is, whether it's like embarrassment, you know, whether whatever the fuck it is that's driving you. And it's interesting, man, because I know for me that kind of came later in life. Like, for me, I found that in a specific thing, but now I can kind of apply it to others. Cause I don't know. I don't know if it's the same with your kids. My kids are all so fucking different. Like, you know, some of them just like, you know, one of them has that so specifically, almost to the point where it's like, yo, dude, you need to fucking ease
chill
the fuck
out a bit.
Up, bro.
Yeah.
And then the other one, it's like, you got to put, you know, just so, you know, laughing his way through everything, which is also kind of beautiful. And I think, and then I have you know, my daughter's just kind of the same. She can do whatever the fuck she wants. She's just like, she just is so incredible. But I guess I get that thing about like trying to put adversity in the kids' lives and challenge it, because, you know, our kids are growing up quite differently than how we grew up. How do you feel like you do that?
It's just, I would say the number one big one is follow through, you know, like whether that's an activity they want to join, you know, it's like, if you hate it, well, you got to finish it out. You got to see every step of the way through it. Then it's just, you know, then it could be stupid shit, you know, doing your chores, cleaning up your room, whatever it may be. But then it's also like, when they're spending time with me, like, they both love to ride motocross. I never want to push them in the direction of racing, but I built them a track at my house.
It's
like, hey, all right, if we're going to ride, you got to check over your motorcycle. We got to go pull weeds on the track. When we're done riding, we're going to rake the track. You're going to get off the rocks off of it. Yeah. And you have to see everything all the way through.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's no whining. You know, like, you've been to my shop.
Yeah.
There's no crying. There's no whining in my shop.
You can
do that shit, go to the house.
Yeah, get the fuck out.
And it's just like setting those kind of, you know, benchmarks for them. You know, we go to the lake. Okay, guys, we're done at the lake. Get up in the boat, start drying everything down. Because that's the only way, if I don't at least start teaching them those fundamentals now, you know as well as anybody, they're not going to learn it in their teens or their 20s.
And it's like a huge problem right now, because I think like everybody wants their kids to be, I mean, I think there is this attitude of like, hey, you want your kids to sort of like grow up better than you, or you want, you, but like, you got, it's a slippery slope.
It
man.
Is.
And it's like, you know, there's such you know such passivity right now, and that's running rampant. And you gotta, you know, it's like, if not us, who else is gonna do it? You know what I mean?
And it's hard to swallow, because it's now starting to translate into team sports and school and all this other shit, where it's like, you know, everyone gets a trophy and everything, you know, all this shit, and it's like, dude, if people haven't learned yet, life isn't easy. Life is fucking hard, and you're setting these kids up for failure. By not giving them the opportunity to lose and to get hungry and motivated for something.
That's
or getting a bad grade.
Yep.
I mean, I can't wrap my head around it.
And you know, you mentioned like team, just, I think like youth sports in general right now, it's something I think about all the time, like raising athletes. And I heard you say that you never really did this for medals, and you've already brought up just sort of like the financials of it, like that you never really did that, you know, you love it and you do it because you love it.
Yeah.
I mean, you fucking flipped a motorcycle, you know what I mean? Like, no one, you know, and then like that changed the whole game, but like just that drive, it was like this thing that you just would not let go. I guess like you couldn't do what you did if this wasn't your dream, if it wasn't what you wanted to do. You know, how do you awaken that in the kid?
I think my answer to that is first and foremost, I want my kids to experience everything. You know, I want them to try things I know nothing about. Like my daughter just fell in love with tennis. Cool. I go play tennis with her. We have a great time playing tennis. I'm terrible, but we have fun doing it. You know, got my kids into water sports, but I think it's a little bit of a slippery slope. I think that on one hand, all the freebies and all the participation trophies and, you know, there's no winner today. I don't think that's setting a great example or a model or a drive for anybody, because me and my youth, if I didn't, you know, it's not like I put my leg over a motorcycle at four and I started winning everything.
Right.
I got my ass kicked for years and years and years until, you know, I cut my teeth.
Yeah.
And without that drive of losing and not getting that trophy, you know, not standing on top of the box, what would have been my drive?
Yep.
Why do you want to try harder then?
Yeah.
If there is no winner, what's the motivation to get better?
Right.
You know, but then there's the flip side, which I see happening in motocross right now with all the private coaching and, you know, not having breaks. I think there's something really cool, again, about, you know, traditional stick and ball sports where you can play baseball for the season and then that same kid can go play football and he can do water polo. Like now where everything is so immersive where you get to pick one sport at 12 years old and you have to stick with that.
It's crazy.
How do you know what is actually going to be your strong suit when you have to make such a commitment so young and it feels like it's a cash grab?
Crazy.
You know, like why does a kid who just wants to play soccer has to do travel soccer and do 60 matches a year
fucking nuts.
All year fucking long? So that's just the kind of like the, I think kids need the nudge and the push.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think they need the opportunity to try a bunch of things because what I want my kids to do that I didn't, just from having maybe a little bit fuller life, because who knows what I maybe missed out on, is to do a broad spectrum of things. And if they are physical or like my daughter right now, like maybe it's acting, whatever it might be, but if she can't figure that out until she's 16, 17, I don't want her to miss out on that opportunity because I made her play tennis at 12.
Right, right, right. Because she's showing some talent for it and she's showing, And I mean, like, it's very rare. I mean, it's very rare that, and I think sometimes it has to do more with a lack of opportunity. Look, man, like, what was thrown in front of you is,
and
like,
that's
you
all
had
I
that
had.
Motorcycle. That's what you
had.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you had this fucking drive. Like, let's go. But I think it's hugely, I mean, my kid, you know, he plays, you know, he's like playing multiple travel sports. I'm like, dude, 3 years ago, he was shitting his pants. Like, he's running around literally with a pamper full of fucking shit or a diaper full of shit. And like, now it's like some professional coach is like, his livelihood depends on my kid's games, whether he wins or not. So I'm like, dude, shut the fuck. You know what I mean?
That,
like,
and that's the part I have a problem with.
It's insane, man. Yeah. Like, I played college, but I didn't pick up a baseball glove till I was 12. Like, I was like doing other shit.
Exactly.
And you know, I mean, just like, I think parenthood in general, man, we so want to get it right. And we're so just, definitely not going to.
No.
You know,
no.
It's like, it's the only job you know you're going to fuck up.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? But you just like keep trying, you keep going, you got to admit your mistakes and you got to be there. And as a young competitor, what was like the culture like? How has it changed? And like, where does like money and like when money comes into it? I've heard you talk a little bit about it, but I'm just really interested about it in your mind and how much that can sort of like fuck things up and how much it can be a driver.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, really looking at the specific part of my career being freestyle motocross, which, you know, got serious for myself and my group of buddies that you're talking about, you know, back in 96, 97. You know, it's much like if you've ever seen that movie, Dogtown and Z-Boys.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very similar to that, you know. We're all young. We're 20, you know, 20, 22, 23, starting to make a little bit of money, you know, getting some attention for doing goofy tricks on our dirt bike, you know, stealing BMX tricks and doing them on dirt bikes. But that camaraderie that we all had, you know, it was, you know, like to your point, you know, we all rode together. There's a group of about 15 guys that when this whole thing kind of started, and we were all racers who were sick of the politics of racing. And we found this new niche, you know, and motocross videos were getting popular and the girls love the motocross videos. So of course we love that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we all just kind of raced hell together. You know, we would ride during the week together and kind of push each other. We'd be on a plane going and doing a contest that weekend. And yeah, you know, everybody wanted to win. But
And I imagine living like fucking maniacs.
Absolute like fucking lunatics.
You know, man, I often think about like, you know, the guys that I came up with. If me and my friends hit it at a young, like, I don't know that I'd be alive. There's just no way that guy could handle, there's no way that you could, what I've heard about you guys is it was sort of that. It was like that perfect storm of like, you guys hit it and you were that. And so like, yeah, like what, can you describe it? Can you sort of like describe what that lifestyle was like?
Yeah. I mean, it was complete chaos. You know, like there was this period of time from, you know, call it like 96 until, you know, 02, 03, where we were just, you know, we were inventing new stuff on a dirt bike weekly, and we got all this influx of attention and really, you know, in a big fish in a small pond fame. And, you know, we were getting flown all over the world to do contests. That's and it. As hard as we rode, we partied even harder.
Fuck yeah.
And it was just, it was a time, like, I'll, you know, probably the easiest way to explain it. You know, there's this time in like 98, 99, 2000, where we would go to Australia and they would do this tour called the Krusty Tour. And keep in mind, it's eight American 25-year-old motocross riders.
Yeah.
And it was this kind of choreographed tour. It's kind of cheesy, whatever, but motocross was massive in Australia. And I'm going to totally date myself on this. The last tour that we all did together, we were outselling stadiums faster than Limp Bizkit and the Kiss finale tour was. Okay, so we were like national treasures over there at this time. Yeah. And, you know, we would show up, we would roll into town and, you know, we'd go do our autograph signings and do some promotions. We would go through, blow through the show. I mean, just complete carnage, you know, destroying motorcycles in the show and, you know, inciting people to come and rush the floor and, you know, causing riots and all this shit. And then we go back into the dressing room and whatever your choice was, if it was drugs, booze, girls, it was all waiting for you in the dressing room. And we had completely trashed the dressing room. And then it was a race to get to the hotel. And we would get to the hotel and in our rider, we had to be in the best hotels. I'll never forget this. We were at the, I think it was the Four Seasons in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And everybody checks in and everybody starts checking in a different rider's name. So we just started grabbing keys and we ended up flooding the entire top floor of the Four Seasons hotel, throwing furniture out of the 18-story window onto a grass tennis court below. So obviously, you know, through your project what that's like. And just we caused $250,000 in damage on a 6-week tour.
Wow.
But the promoter was just scratching checks because what he was getting at the shows and this whole persona followed us through each city.
Yeah.
And it just got crazier and crazier. And I mean, it's a snapshot in time as to what life was like as each of us individually in our career trajectory, going from no one knew us 2.5 years earlier to this, you know, chaos.
Yeah.
And then to your point, you know, then the money starts coming in and not that I don't think it was anything super negative, but guys just started to kind of take on their own role. You know, I got a little bit serious about my career. It's like, okay, you know, there's a time to party, there's a time to get serious. And I took the serious role as well as a handful of other guys. And some of the other guys, unfortunately, couldn't let the party go.
Sure.
And that was slowly the demise of their career.
Do you go back to sort of thinking about your dad and all the sacrifices he made? Do you think about like what it is, like what your goals were? Was it a specific goal that you were trying to sort of achieve that you realized that like living that way wouldn't like how do you get there?
You know, my old man told me when I was younger, like right when I first turned pro, and he meant this from a lot of different categories. He's like, you got one shot at this.
Yeah.
He's like, you're going to snap your fingers and you're going to be old and beat up and your time's going to be over.
Yep.
So he's like, don't live with any regret and give it 100% at all times.
Yep.
And that was 100% on the dirt bike. That was 100% in partying and enjoying myself. That was 100% at providing for my sponsors and making a career out of it. And I think that's really where it came from. Cause it's like, you have one shot at it and that's it. And there's nothing worse in life than living with regret. Yep. Right now I can sit in this chair and say, I probably gave my motocross, me on my dirt bike, 95%. And the only reason why that 5% fluctuates is because there was a time where I started working a little bit more on a business as I got older or focusing a little bit more time on my relationship with my wife. But I can say for a certain period of time, it was 100%. And at worst case, it was 95%. And now I sit here with no regrets. You know, there are periods of my career that I didn't love, like after I did my first backflip and then the pressure and the elevation that the sport had and how I had a system of either I was going to get a medal or I was going to leave on a stretcher. Like right. that was my career at that point. And I didn't like that part of it. But sitting here in this chair now, I still ride 3 days a week. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
It's not pulling teeth to get me on my dirt bike.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the races and the photo shoots I'm going to do this summer.
Yeah.
And I've worked hard enough to where I can be, this is the most enjoyable part of my career. Cause I don't have a gun to my head.
Yep.
I'm making money still
yep.
and I'm enjoying myself.
But you've also, you know, like the first business was really tattoos, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So like, and then that like blossomed to this like huge fucking line, TV shows, like the whole thing, right? It like blew the fuck up. Like when you first started that came out of an injury, that came out of like you being injured and not really you sort of not, what was it like, not having like energy to, you, not being able to direct your energy towards a certain place?
Well, that's what's funny. So again, you know, kind of everything happens for a reason. I was moving forward on doing my tattoo shop, and it was just going to be a passion project. You know, obviously I love getting tattoos. Yeah. I lived in Vegas. So I was going to open this little tattoo shop as a passion project. So I was, you know, have something to make a little bit more money on. And I had that injury on Tony Hawk tour. So basically what I thought, it was going to be a career ending injury. You right. know, like I told you, it took me 6 months to even be able to walk on my own two legs out of a wheelchair. So I immersed myself in that business. Like at that point in my life, my motocross career was over. Uh-huh. You know, I had a couple of contracts, a little bit of money in the bank, and I had to pivot. I had to make something else happen.
And what's driving you there? Like for you to go 100% into being like, okay, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to like focus everything into this. Like what is it to win? Is it to be successful?
I mean, I don't want to sound shallow because obviously, you know, we all have to have careers, have jobs. You know, what I knew I didn't want to do, which is as important as my upbringing was to me, I didn't want to go back to living in Las Vegas, doing asphalt for my old man. And that's something that he ingrained in me. He's like, I mean,
was there really any chance of that then?
I mean, who knows? Right. You know, I mean, like, but that's the pressure I put on myself. I know, and then that's that switch in my head fucking is like, A. I don't want to go back to what I was. Yeah. I don't want to go back to what my destiny probably would have been had I not been successful in motocross. Now, I'm sure I would have done something else, but that's the drive that kind of would snap me into whatever my pivot was going to be. But then there's also, you know, I want work to be fun. I want to love my job.
Right.
Like, I don't want to drag my ass out of bed on Monday and be miserable until Friday after work. You know, I watched my dad do that my entire life.
Right.
So there was a lot of motivations, but obviously, you know, being successful and making money and sustaining a lifestyle was one of them. But then there was also like, I don't want to just do the same thing everybody's doing. I want to do it different, and I want to do it the best, and I want to make it the biggest, and I want to create so many avenues off of that one opportunity. I want to see what I can grow this into.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was really kind of my challenge. Like, I love to be challenged.
Yep.
And there is a lot of business opportunities where, I mean, look, I'm going to tell you, I've taken my licks and learned the hard way, you know, even through my tattoo business on paperwork and contracts that have cost me like a college education and a learning lesson.
Yep.
But it was just that drive to just do something different and something new and something better and something bigger.
And when you're starting something new like that, I mean, like, look, man, the impetus for this for me was literally just being like really just sort of frustrated with discourse surrounding, honestly, the kind of national conversation after George Floyd was killed.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely horrified and disgusted with what I saw, but also not want to throw bottles at police officers.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't understand why I couldn't have that attitude. And then I just thought of all like the wonderful people that I knew. And I was like, fuck, man, I want to hear what they think. And I want to bring them on. And
there's gray. Everything isn't black and white. There's gray.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to be on one side of the fence.
Well, there's nothing honest. I mean, I think that like fundamentalism is like the opposite of honesty. And I think it's also like the opposite of what we try to do in this country. It's all about discourse and compromise and respect. And hey, you might think differently than me, but you don't scare me. Like we can talk. We can
like, what's up?
100%. We can have a beer and like completely disagree and like agree that we like love our families. And I want what's best for your family.
Yeah.
You want what's best for mine because we live in the greatest country on earth.
Exactly.
And I just don't know kind of where that went. My driver, I guess, is more towards bringing on the kind of people I would want my kids to listen to. And that, I'm just wondering, like, for you, I mean, I think, you know, you sort of have this innate, unbelievable understanding of marketing and you know, you're amazing on camera. It's like you're going into these worlds where you didn't know much about, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, when you go into those things, is it like, fuck, man, I know what I'm doing? Or is it like, I mean, do you have a vision? Like, so how do you go through that?
You know, everything that I've done has started as a passion, you know. Tattooing. I love tattoos. I love hanging out in tattoo shops. They were kind of like my barber shop, you know, and I just didn't feel that most of them were done well. So I rolled the dice. This was going to be a passion project for me. Due to injuries, I focused on it 100% and I took my licks, you know, and that was the great thing about when we did Ink, because it was just about this stupid motorcycle rider who opened a tattoo shop in a casino and fly on the wall and let's see if I can make this thing happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I took my licks, you know, like bad partnerships and costing me millions of dollars to buy him out and all these things. Like, I took my licks, but it's also that drive too. Like, I love being the underdog. I love waking up in the morning knowing that I got to go claw my way to the top. Yeah. And because when you get to the top of that mountain, it's just going to be that much sweeter.
Yep, yep.
So it was always, it's exciting. You know, like there's something exciting about rolling the dice on a bad fucking idea and seeing if you come out good on the backside of it.
Fucking, I don't know, that goes back to, I think, like the way we're trying to raise up these kids too. It's like, you know, like don't run away from that. Like that's not a reason to run away. Like run towards that.
No, take it head on.
Fucking run towards that. Yeah, and I want to fuck with one of these things real quick, dude.
So you said you got to try these.
Yeah, yeah. Will you just tell me about it real quick?
So I think there's a time and a place for pharmaceuticals, but I feel that, you know, we're talking about our world, our country, our planet, and medications and what people kind of deal with to kind of get through their day-to-day. So this stuff, feel free. I've been working with this company for a while, and I absolutely swear by it. So, you know, as we've been having these conversations, whether it's through the concussions that I've had or just the high pressures of life, being responsible for children, I deal a lot with stress and anxieties. And, you know, I get a little, you know, I dabble a little bit in depression. And what I love about these things is it's all holistic. You know, it's just kava and, you know, different plant medicine. Uh-huh. It helps with inflammation. It's great motivator to get in the gym. It's a great recovery, but more for what it does for like my headspace.
Yeah.
If I'm anxious, stressed, whatever, it's just an instant mood changer. Uh-huh. Like, you know, talking about our kids every day, you know, I'm with Big B down in my shop and dealing with the trials and tribulations of building motorcycles.
Yeah.
And so right before I head to the house, about a half hour before I go up to the house, I'm in a grumpy mood. I'm bad. I've been on conference calls all day. I whack one of these and I'm like dad of the year. Cause I'm in there. Like I'm engaged with my kids. I'm not looking at my phone. So now I wanted to bring you some of these because it's just a great option to, you know, whether it's the energy drink craze or, you know, I'm just a firm believer is if you can steer around the, you know, the pharmaceuticals as much as possible, it doesn't hurt.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah. It's not that, it tastes pretty good actually, man.
It's an acquired taste. Like some people, you know, some people have a hard time with it. You know, for Big B, if it's not like jelly flavored, he has a hard time with stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just kind of takes the edge off stuff and kind of helps you get a little chatty and relaxes you.
Fucking A. I like that.
Yeah. So yeah, let me know what you think.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that, man. And I guess, you know, I also just wanted to talk about, you know, man, like, look, dude, you're fucking, you know, you're like this like super famous elite fucking athlete. You did, and then like you're in her fucking world, dude. Yeah. Yeah. You're in her. And like, that's fucking great, man.
You know what? I'll actually, I think a big, you know, me and my wife have been together for 20 years.
Yeah, us too.
Which is pretty monumental in our, you know, well, your world and especially with me and my wife. And, you know, I learned at a very young age where, you know, I thought I was, you know, big shit, big fish in a little pond. And I remember the first, it was like, you know, VMAs or something like that I went to with her on a red carpet.
Yeah.
You know, this was like 6 months after I did my first backflip and I was just on, you know, Johnny Carson, but David Letterman.
Yeah, you're
and like
the fucking
I was
man, dude.
Fucking feeling myself.
Yeah, straight up.
And I remember going on that red carpet and everyone's like, hey, Corey, look this way. And I'm like, oh, no, it's Carrie. Hey, Casey, over here. And then, hey, can we get a single of Pink by yourself? And I'm standing over there holding her purse like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I feel that I've always done a pretty good job of being humble.
Yeah.
But that experience when you're at the top of the totem pole in your world and you get knocked down 15 levels, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, man.
I need to be aware of how I'm treating people and how I'm acting because my shit still stinks.
Yeah.
And
fuck
I'm not that is cool. You know, I'm not that cool. And a lot of people get caught up in that.
Yeah, man. And you know, man, I could feel that. I could feel just at your place. First of all, you know, man, I'll be honest with you. Like, I'm not like when I went to your
that
place
first
the first
time.
I was like, fuck, dude. I was like, God damn, dude, being a fucking motorcycle.
Motocross pays well.
I was like, holy shit, dude. And there dude, I had no idea, you know, who your wife was and all that. But like the first thing that kind of like became like super apparent was just like how I don't know, everybody that it's like your place is kind of like fucking heaven, bro. Like
it
everyone's
is.
Like super kind there and super happy and everybody knows each other and there's a really kind of cool and beautiful vibe. I mean, like you must be just like enormously proud, man. I mean, you must just be like what?
It was crazy because when we first met, I mean, from a like the story I just told you, she was much more popular than me on a grand scope. But when we first met, she lived in a little 800 square foot apartment in Venice Beach.
Right.
And you know, our first date or one of our first few dates when she came to Vegas to spend the weekend with me, you know, I picked her up in the airport, you know, I had a big old lifted F-250 truck, you know, motocross guy and took her to my house in Vegas, you know, and now I was sort of about the peak of my financial career at that point. And my wife now, we pull up to my house, she's like, what, do you still live with your parents? And I'm like, no, this is my house. What are you talking about? Because I didn't kind of connect all the dots. Yeah. And then shortly after that, I went to her apartment in Venice. But, you know, I watched her come up. You know, I watched her start to get her feet under her. And not even, you know, from the money aspect, but like fine-tune herself from being this little rough girl from Philly, kind of R&B into this, you know, she built herself into this, you know, rock power, you know, female strong, well-rounded musician. Uh-huh. And I watched her tune that and tune her persona and who she is.
Yeah.
And so like, I literally watched her grow as a musician.
Me and my wife, we grew up together, man. Like, you know, when I met my wife, I was like bouncing at a bar. I was like, you know, I was like pretty much, you know, I was still sort of a shit bag. I mean, I had this dream, but we kind of came up together, and her, she was a nurse, and she was sort of like paying my way through. And we were, you know, we've been through it together. You guys have an understanding, I would imagine, of like what it means to be like a bit of a public person, and like what are the complications that come with that, and like what are the ways that that's like a benefit?
I mean, I think just the tricky part is we live very big business professional lives, and it is kind of hard to manage. Yeah. And that does kind of get involved in our personal life from an aspect of, it's like, well, as normal as we feel that we are away from our day jobs, you know, we want to plan a trip to Disneyland. It doesn't always go as planned, you know?
One funny story.
My last X Games, Willow was a year old, so 9 years ago. You know, been training, preparing for it, all that kind of fun stuff. And, you know, and she was very supportive, because, you know, when I'm training for an event, it's very time consuming. So I go, we're at the Staples Center. I have my last contest, finished fourth or fifth at the event, you know, big after party for me, all this fun stuff. We go back to the hotel room, go to bed at like 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, nanny's in the room with our daughter until we got home. And, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, Willow starts crying. You know, I'm thinking like, dude, I'm a little banged up, I'm a little sore. I just competed the night before. And she elbows me. She's like, fucking X Games is over. Go get that kid. And I'm just like, I don't even get a 24-hour porch pass. And it's like, get your ass up, get back on dad duty. She's like, I just did mom duty while you're training for this event.
And your business, motherfucker.
That's what, you know, I think is like kind of the equalizer.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. And what about Big B, man? What about, you know, like...
Oh, he's suspect.
He's that motherfucker, man. That motherfucker. Just talk a little bit about your friendship and kind of like, you know, how... I don't know. I just think for me, there's nothing that's more important to me than my family and my friends. And it seems like you're from the same cloth. What is it about your guy's friendship, and like, what does he mean to you?
Oh man, me and Big B have been friends for 25 years now. You know, and I probably, much like you, I have a really small circle of friends. No, don't get me wrong. I have acquaintances, and you know, but my true friends is a very small circle, and they're all long-term friends. And, you know, me and Big B have been friends for 25 years. And it's funny because, you know, motocross is my day job. His day job is he's a rapper. He's a musician.
Yep.
And we became friends through our lifestyles in the motocross community. You know, a lot of motocross viewers were using his music. We're from Vegas, you know, and that's really what kind of sparked our friendship. And me and him kind of grew up and, you know, off together. We have a great tight circle, and I wouldn't change any of it for the world.
Fucking A, man. That's beautiful. What do you worry about, dude? Like, what are you afraid of?
Failure.
Uh-huh.
Failure and disappointment.
Uh-huh.
Disappointment
through
my kids.
People being disappointed? Okay.
You know, disappointing or failing my kids as being, you know, a father, failing or disappointing my partner being my wife, same thing with my friends, and in business and in career failing, you know, like that's always been my driving force, is to fail. Like, whatever that might be, whether it's, you know, just not getting to the goal, or, you know, monetary or success-wise, whatever, it's just failure.
And how do you deal with it when it comes?
You got to take your licks and learn from it, and be humble. Uh-huh. I've made a lot of bad decisions in life and business and relationships, and you learn from it. You know, not a non-narcissist will learn from that, fix that, and move forward. And I try to do just that.
Fucking A. Are you good, man? You want to talk about anything else, man? You like?
Yeah, actually, I want to ask you a question.
You can ask me whatever the fuck.
I
want to
180 this sit down podcast.
Let's go, bro. Let's go.
So, you know, we've talked about family and, you know, your wife and your relationship. So, how do you manage, whether it's the calendar, stepping off set, back to being dad, husband? Like, how do you manage that? Because at least for me, it's these snippets. Like I said, it's a weekend of motocross racing, or it's, you know, Alicia's on stage for 2.5 hours a night. I mean, you have to immerse yourself into a character. You have to change your mentality and your being and your mannerisms. Like, how do you balance that?
Look, man, you're way better at this than I am, dude. That's the question, right? And not necessarily knowing the answer is kind of the answer. Mm-hmm. I do the best I fucking can, and I know that I like live by this coda of just really being where the fuck you are while you're there.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the time, the way I work, whether it's fortunate or unfortunate, is this full immersion, you know, and sometimes dangerously so, and not to get too fucking, you know, cheese dick, hoity-toity actor bullshit, but like I do, man, I give everything to it, and I'm so great. Like I couldn't have a family, I couldn't have my wife, yeah. I couldn't have my kids. I would be that same fuck up if it wasn't for this. So I put everything into this. The only other thing in my life that I feel that level of sort of like sacredness is my family, and it's these two things. So, you know, one answer for sure is trim fat. Like, do not take on, cut out relationships that get in the way of either of those things. The big problem with me, man, is that, like, you know, I go into these jobs, these projects, and I immerse so deeply that I connect with these communities. And I get enormously close with people. And I think the problem is then the project's over and I'm not the kind of guy that's just going to be like, yo, dude, like you know, I got into your life. I've been in your cell. I've been in your home. I've been in your church. I've been in your kitchen. And now I can't fuck with you anymore. Yeah. So it does. I'm super grateful for it because it's built this like rich tapestry of unbelievable relationships, which just being an asshole puts on makeup and says lines for a living has given me entryway into people opening up and sharing their life with me, which I like. That shit is sacred. I treasure that. But yeah, man, it's you know, normally, you know, my kind of process is, you know, getting in my truck with my dogs and like driving, whether it's Arizona, New Mexico, Atlanta, New York, getting there, being there the whole fucking time, being in 100%, and then kind of driving back and using that drive to sort of shed that shit. Yeah, man, and get back. Look, man, I have gotten to a point now where I can't miss anymore, you know, here. Yeah. And, I do have more peace of mind now than I've ever had, you know, trimming so much fat off and being here or there, but I'm still on that fucking chase and I'm cool with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I figured it was hard because, you know, like I first got exposed to you through Walking Dead and then seeing The Punisher and Wolf of Wall Street and then the Serena Williams project. It's like, I figured you have to be that immersive of a person because you can't be as good as you are by phoning
it in. Man. Yeah, I mean, and but it's like the same thing. Like, I wouldn't want, you know, look, man, like, I wouldn't want to, I don't want it to be easy. And it's not that, it's, look, man, if I could just walk up and kind of like
walk,
like,
switch on.
Yeah, like, there's some people who like are on their fucking phones on set and they can just fucking like, you know, like I don't have the balls to even try that, man. Yeah. It's just like, I've got to go.
Well, you know, it works for you.
I think like you, man, I wouldn't change it for the world. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm very impressed by, like I said, we've known each other a short time, but your craft on screen, your personal life, your priorities, you as a person. Thanks, I mean, man. You know, like me and Big B have talked about it, you know, especially after you met Big B the last time coming down. I mean, you're one of us, which is fun because in this new day and age of people and priorities and well-being, it's like you come across them very, very, very rarely. So
yeah, man, yeah, I feel the same way.
I appreciate who you are and the person that you are.
Thank you, man. I feel the same way, man. Like just total respect and admiration for both of you guys. Yeah, it's I'm grateful, dude.
All right. Well, when you slow down, we're gonna go ride some motorcycles.
We'll definitely ride some motorcycles. Yeah, man. That would be that'd be great, dude. That'd be great. Thank you for doing this, bro.
Dude, all good. Thank you for having me.
Man. Thank you, bro. Thanks for being here, everybody. I really appreciate it. If you dug what you saw and you want to hear more, subscribe, like, do all that stuff. It'd mean a lot to us. I hope you dig these episodes as much as we dig doing them. You guys take care of yourself.